What is up, and welcome back to 24 Minutes of A24, the podcast that takes a look at the A24 library 24 minutes at a time. I'm Ethan Simi.
And I'm Ben Lawhorn. This week on the pod, we are heading over to Vietnam as we talk about A24's newest series, The Sympathizer.
Near the end of the Vietnam War, a plant who was embedded in the South Vietnam Army flees to the United States and takes up residence in a refugee community where he continues to secretly spy and report back to the Viet Cong. Ben, I want to start this pod off. We are 1 week post-Civil War. I know we're talking about The Sympathizer here on the pod, but I got to get Civil War out of the way.
Got to do it.
Have you seen it again? / how are you feeling 1 week post? Because the takes are out there, and people are just all over the board.
Yeah, they're all over the place, which I think is interesting. I'm enjoying seeing all the discussion out there. Like, I'm glad a movie like this is getting that kind of discourse out there. I've not seen it again, but it hasn't been because I haven't wanted to. Like, I do want to see it again before it leaves the theater. But yeah, it's interesting to hear all these people's takes. You know, if there are some people, it's like, you know what? I feel like the guy in The Sympathizer, it's like, I see both sides. Like, when people are just like, nope, there's nothing here. It's like, I mean, I kind of get it. Like, you know, that's fine, whatever. And there's people like, oh, this is such a good discourse or a good, you know, reflection on the society and all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, man, you're totally right. I get it. Like, I see both, and maybe that's why I fell right into the middle of like 3.5. I was like, yeah, I get it. It's good. So I'm glad it's getting so much attention.
Yeah, I'm glad it's getting a lot of attention as well. And speaking of attention, and the reason that I asked you is because we have a few housekeeping things before we talk about The Sympathizer, which, by the way, a show produced and directed by Park Chan-wook, starring Academy Award winner RDJ. Just kind of a big deal. Nothing too crazy. Sure. Civil War goes on to have the biggest opening weekend in A24 history. Sees, I believe, the first weekend ever with an A24 film at the number one spot in the domestic box office, and pulls in $25 million. At the box office. Of course, this movie, notably the most expensive A24 movie that has been created. I think that is really encouraging. I think people are out there. I think people are watching it. Every single time I see any Reddit discussion, Twitter thread, anything like that, people are always recommending to see it in IMAX, which I think is really great. A really good kind of thing that people are realizing, like, hey, this movie is designed for IMAX. I did actually have somebody text me out of the blue today, just like, have you seen Civil War? And I was like, oh wow, we're there, like, in the culture. Nice. Like, people are just like asking other people if they've seen it. Very, very exciting. That's the good part about Civil War. We've got a bad part we got to discuss. Yeah. Because as of today that we're recording, the day before this pod drops, some posters came out for Civil War, four posters in particular, and A24 tweeted them, as they do. And, you know, had a little Civil War caption. Not soon after they were released, people realized that these were AI generated posters. This is no good. This is just no good. This is horseshit from A24. We got to be honest here.
Who on their marketing team thought this was a good idea? Like, given the discourse around AI and artwork and things like that, like, I was shocked. You know, to be transparent, I enjoyed the posters when I saw them, and I thought, like, oh, that's a really unique idea.
Yep.
And they did a great job putting these together. And then everything came out about being AI. I'm like, oh, that's such a bummer, because I feel like a good artist could have had a really good time putting these things together. Like, it's such an interesting idea. And why are you guys doing it this way? Like, that's just so frustrating. It just kind of undercuts, I feel like, the impact of,
yeah,
A24, you know, like, what this movie's having. Is like, you guys, like, you know, I don't know, it's like Star Wars, like, you're the chosen one, you know what I mean? It's like, you were supposed to be better than all of us, like, and it's just like, you know, you guys just like fell guilty to doing AI artwork as well. Like, that's such a bummer.
Yeah, it sucks. I share your sentiment as well, and I saw them and I did not give them a second thought. I was like, oh cool, Civil War posters, like, yeah, those are sweet. Like, the walking juxtaposition of the film that we discussed last week on the pod, right? Like, that's captured in the posters, and then obviously people spotted it, and the discourse, like, and the tide kind of quickly changed, as it should.
Yeah.
And you know, look, Civil War's been in the pipeline for a long time. They knew it was going to be big. They knew it was going to have a big opening weekend. They knew they needed to be ready with content and posters and merch drops that I fucking missed out on because I was on a flight in the middle dude, of the air.
I can't believe it.
I'm so mad. I wanted that Civil War t-shirt so bad. And then my plane landed and just sold out. Gone. Sucks. So if anybody's got the plug on the Civil War t-shirt, hit it up. I need it. But the AI poster is exceptionally bad decision. I think a terrible move from A24, like as a brand here for the movie that they are so wildly invested in. And I hope they see the feedback. Like, I hope they see what happened and they take that and they do not do this again.
Yeah.
To your point, I feel like an artist could have just like ate this up. Like they could have just made some really, really cool stuff and didn't get the chance to see that.
Yeah, I think that would have been amazing what they did. Like, I wanted that San Francisco one. Like, I thought it was cool. Like, damn, if I can get my hands on that poster, I would take it. But obviously now it's like feels different given what the source of it is. But it's just like, yeah, if you'd given like a local artist in each community, like big city, just like, hey,
dude,
New York City's
great
under attack.
Idea.
Let's see it. You know what I mean? It's like find a different artist in each spot, like do your town, but in a Civil War. It's like that would have been so cool to see.
We got to get you on their marketing squad. You got to replace the person that's getting fired for this.
Make it happen. Sign to the DMs.
Make it happen. Okay. Last piece of housekeeping before we talk about the sympathizer here. We've got a new TV series coming from A24. I don't know. Here's the thing. I stumbled across this on Instagram and I think it was posted today and I sent it to you and I was like, oh, like six question marks. Apparently, this is called Sunny. It is a dark and thrilling series from A24, starring and executive produced by Rashida Jones, premieres July 10th on Apple TV Plus. Here's what we know. Her husband's gone missing, and her only clue is the robot he left behind. This just feels like it's out of the blue. Like, they're just like, yo, let's just drop this news. I haven't heard shit about Sunny.
I think for the most part, we keep our eyes on like what movies are coming out that like even been announced, but we don't have dates yet. And I don't think we do that as well with like the TV shows. So like they really just come out of the blue for us. Like, oh shit, there's a TV show now. Like this is crazy. This just like completely came out of nowhere. Love Rashida Jones. Like it sounds like an interesting idea. It seems very A24. And yeah, I guess we've got something we're going to be covering in July now.
Yeah, rock and roll. I love it. And yeah, I agree with you. Rashida Jones, good stuff. We got like six stills, I think, on Instagram that A24 posted. Don't really tell us a lot. They don't really reveal a lot. But I'm curious like when we're going to get a trailer for this and like what the rollout for this might be. Speaking of TV, obviously we're covering The Sympathizer, A24's newest TV show on Max. We're talking about that now. But there are several other like AE24 TV shows, and I want to put a pin in that conversation and that question for just a little bit from now, because I think you're right. I think AE24 TV shows more times than not go under the radar, and I think that's an interesting thing that we should talk about. Okay, let's talk about The Sympathizer, episode one. What did you think? What did you make of the show? What do you know about The Sympathizer? Because this is based on a book, to my knowledge, adapted from a book. I've never read it. I don't know anything about it. I went into this blind.
Yeah, apparently it's a Pulitzer Prize winning book. I had never even heard of it before. So other people know about it for sure, but like
not plugged into the Pulitzer Prize community there, Ben?
No, I guess not. I need to get on Pulitzer TikTok or something. But I enjoyed this. I thought it was really good. I mean, Park Chan-wook, it's hard to, you know, argue against director Park. He's pretty awesome. So he continued to carry that in this episode. I think we got a lot of great acting. RDJ, it's funny because I had a thought while watching this that he's kind of like, he's finally entered his phase of like, I'm just going to do weird shit now. Like,
yeah.
Daniel Radcliffe with like Swiss Army Man, because like he was Iron Man for 20 years and he's just like, no more, I can't do it. Like now I can just do whatever the fuck I want. I have all the MCU money. I'm just going to go crazy. And I'm happy to see it. Like, yeah, just do weird shit. Like, this is great. I thought he was fantastic in this. I thought he was really, really good. I'm excited to see him more in this show, like especially under these like different costumes or personalities or whatever. I thought our main dude, I'm totally gonna fuck up his name, Hoa Joande, but the guy who plays the captain, I thought he was great as well. He's a wonderful protagonist to spend time with. I thought the conceit of the show was really interesting. You know, I listened to some pods like with the producers and stuff like that, and how he's not necessarily supposed to be like a reliable narrator. And I think we get that from the very beginning. He's like, oh, I told you it was this movie, but actually it's this movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay. So we don't know what we can really trust from anything we hear from him the whole time. I thought that was kind of cool. I don't know. I had a good time with this show. It was a lot more impressive than I was expecting on pretty much every level. And I'm curious to see where it goes, because now, you know, I know that we're heading to America and heading into that part. But as far as like setting the tone of the show, I think it did a really good job with this episode.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good episode one. I think I agree with a lot of what you said. I think our guy who plays the captain, I think his narrative of like possibly being an unworthy narrator is really interesting. And I love how the first episode is framed, because the first episode is framed as him recalling the events that transpired in Vietnam before they came to America. And so like under that guise, I think is a great way to put it. And so we kind of live the first episode through his retelling of what happened before the fall of Saigon. And we kind of do some time hopping, which I thought was really cool. RDJ, I think, is great for this show. And I think personally, there's like two things that I'm really interested in this show. Well, I guess I could say three, like as of right now after episode one. Number one is RDJ. Like I would just like to spend more time with him. I think he's bringing the goods. And I think you're totally right about like he's in his era where he's like, I just want to do weird shit. I think he's also in an era where I think it's kind of interesting because Oppenheimer puts him in a weird spot. Like winning an Academy Award for that is kind of weird, because Christopher Nolan is now regarded as this esteemed elite filmmaker, right? And he has been for quite some time. But I think in RDJ's case, he's a little more interested in getting weird with weirder esteemed people. So like Park Chan-wook, one of those guys where it's like anything he puts out, kind of a masterpiece. And so like RDJ is like, I want to get in on that. I want to know what that's like to move in that direction. And I think this is a great project for him to do it. So I think that's one thing that I'm really interested in. Number two, the kind of noir like espionage part of everything, I think is told in a very intriguing manner. I think if not, it can be told like a little discombobulating. Like I was a little like, oh, what do we like? What's our goal here? What are we doing? Oh, we're time hopping again. And like, I think it was a lot of information to take in the first episode. But again, as a first episode, I think it works. And I think we'll eventually kind of spread that thinner. Third thing that I'm really interested in is Park Chan-wook's just fucking incredible transitions. Can we just like let's take a beat to talk about these transitions, because we get two in particular that I want to call out. We get a rotary phone dial that turns into, that fades into the hubcap of a wheel that's spinning. Yeah. Gorgeous, just beautiful stuff. And then we get a cigarette that's being sucked down and the ash on the end glows, and that ash then turns into a bomb in the sky that's falling. Brilliant stuff. The camera work, the transitions in particular, and of course we'll go through this kind of scene by scene here, the camera work that's in the cinema that we're kind of like, we're floating, we're zooming, we're moving around, and like we're kind of, we as an audience are trying to find our footing of like, what do we believe, what side are we on here, is really fascinating stuff. I think it's a pretty good episode one. I have a couple questions for you. This episode, if you watch it, if we were not watching it for the pod, would you watch episode two? Would you continue with The Sympathizer?
Yeah, I think I would. Yeah, I enjoyed it enough that I'm curious to see where the story goes, especially because this episode one is all in flashback, you know, so it's kind of like, and you're reminded, for me anyway, I forgot about it midway through the episode. And then, you know, at the end we go back and we're back in the re-education camp, whatever. It's like, oh shit. Yeah, that's right. We've already, like, this stuff has already happened. Where's he at now? And how did he get here? I want to know that. So I'd be back for episode two. Honestly, like, sometimes I'm just really bad about watching shows in general. And I fall into, like, probably what a lot of people do, where it's like, I'll just watch it when it all comes out, you know, like, yeah. I'll just binge it all at once. So I can't say I would have, like, watched it right now, but I definitely would have been interested to watch it.
Okay, that's great. I'm glad that you delineated, because I'm in a similar boat. I don't know if I would have necessarily jumped on episode two if we were not covering this. Not to say I didn't have a good time with the first, but it doesn't seem like something that I would need to watch right away in order to, like, either be part of the social conversation or, like, really kind of be on the hype about this show. But if all of them came out, and I think we're getting 8 episodes,
something like that. Yeah.
Something 6 or 8. I think if they all came out, I would probably be like, oh, like, yeah, let's like just bust out the Sympathizer. And I'm very pro weekly release. So I don't know what that means. Like, I don't know what that says about the show. I don't know what that says about me. Speaking of other A24 shows, and the reason I ask you this question is so then I can proceed into this next question here. So The Curse is the last A24 TV show that we got.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking just brilliant. Masterpiece of a show. I was locked in. I was so locked in. I don't remember the last time that I was locked into a streaming TV show that was a weekly release, and I watched it the morning of the release every single week. And I did that with The Curse for 10 weeks. And I was so in on that show. But you, of course, we covered episodes 1 through 5 here on the pod.
Mm-hmm.
Once we covered those, you were out. You just didn't watch any more of The Curse. You never came back to it.
Very true. Yeah. And not
That's
for
it.
Like,
that's my point. I just want to say you never came back to The Curse. And
I mean,
you
did
me.
It. Next, let's go. Yeah, I don't know. It's not for lack of interest. Like, I am curious how it wraps up. Like, I obviously love Nathan Fielder, Emma Stone. Like, I'm into the idea of it. It's just like, man, we just watch so much stuff for pods. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Sometimes it's just like, I need to veg out with The Circle or like throw on The Office again or something. Sometimes I'm just not great at like, oh yeah, I need to finish that show. I'm like, I don't know. I'll get to it, but not tonight. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of a thing. But it's not The Idol where I'm like, I never need to finish that ever. I don't feel that way about The Curse.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll get
no,
to it.
No, it's fair. Look, I still listen to some of the songs from The Idol. I will admit it served as a very good weekend promo for some music. That's what I got out of that show.
Yeah, I mean, your personality is very much like The Weeknd from that show, right? That's what you've like centered it around. Like, that's what you're going for. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Him and Howie Radner. That's just who I try to emulate all the time. How can I blend these two just really fucked up guys? I want to be them. Of course, we mentioned The Curse. You mentioned The Idol. Euphoria, probably the biggest A24 TV show that we have got. We talked about some of the Euphoria news last week. Might not ever come back. Who knows? Beef,
which is
huge winner for A24. Irma Vep, which we covered here on the show as well. I think a show that both of us quite enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And then Has Been Hotel. I wanted to bring this one up because we are planning on covering Has Been Hotel next month here on the show. I know it's come out, and I know a lot of people are liking it. It's kind of growing a nice big hive of big fans, and I'm really excited to check it out. So A24 has got kind of the wide range of TV shows. The last point I want to bring up before we get into True Cinemas is the fact that, at least at time of recording this, it feels like we're entering the big TV season. We're entering, like, there's a lot of good shit out there kind of time. Of course, we have The Sympathizer right now. The Fallout series just dropped on Amazon. I've heard really, really good things. I'm partway through the first episode, and I'm enjoying it so far. We've got Under the Bridge, the new TV show on Hulu, starring Riley Keough.
And Lily Gladstone, right?
What's that? And Lily Gladstone. Yep, exactly. And so it just feels like there's a lot of new stuff out there right now. I'm curious, like, out of all of these things, where do you think The Sympathizer is going to land? Like, in the social conversation, if we go all the way to episode 8, And we're going to do a full season recap here whenever the season comes out. So we'll do this episode on one, and we'll cover the whole season later on.
Mm-hmm.
What, like, is it going to be in the conversation? Is it going to be being talked about? Like, do you think it has that potential because of Park Chan-wook, because of RDJ? Or is it, like, too prestige, too, like, committed to whatever to really amass that's its place in that?
I don't know. It's interesting because I, even after episode one has come out, I've seen so little about it on Twitter.
I haven't seen anybody talking about it. Nobody's talking about this show.
Yeah. And I think that's just like a reflection of the times where there's just like TV everywhere and everyone, like, there's just so much to watch. So what do people talk about? Obviously, this didn't hit like Game of Thrones or any of those kind of shows, anything like that. A little more niche, I guess, but you know, Fallout seems to be getting a lot of people's attention, which is, that's awesome. You know, it's great that it's doing that, but it doesn't seem like the sympathizer is going to get that kind of reaction. So I'm curious to see what kind of feedback even we get, you know, on these episodes. Yeah. Like, are people watching this at all to even like want to have discussions about it? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious by the time we get to the end of the season, if it will feel to us like one of those things where it's like, ooh, we're part of the small crowd that got to enjoy the sympathizer, and we found a gem, and everybody out there is missing out. I have a hunch that might be where this show is going to be headed. Okay. Let's do True Cinema. Cause I want to talk about RDJ in this show a little bit. We start, you mentioned, kind of in the re-education camp with the captain and him kind of like being asked to recall things that had transpired and things that had happened. He recalls winter 1965, 4 months before the fall of Saigon, and kind of meeting Claude, who is Robert Downey Jr.'s character. Claude works for the CIA, as far as I'm aware, and is pretty much an informant and helping to get the captain safely spying on the general and what is going on in Vietnam. Now he meets with Claude. You mentioned this whole idea of like, oh, I know I told you guys it was this movie, but that movie was actually on the way out and another movie was coming in and playing. So unreliable narrator situation. Mm-hmm. When RDJ showed up, and of course we know he's going to show up, we know he's going to be in the show as a lot of different people, which I'm really interested in. But I'm curious for you, when he showed up, were you like, oh, that's like RDJ, good to see you? Or were you like, oh, what's this character about here? Like, is RDJ too big to do shit? Like, is he just, does he grow past anything that he's in?
I think I bought into him for what he was. Like, I think we talked about it just on our own, like with Dune 2, like Christopher Walken is just Christopher Walken. Like, right. he can't be anything else. And so when he shows up in that movie, I'm like, oh, that's Christopher Walken in Dune 2. This isn't working. Whereas Javier Bardem, I'm like, I'm totally buying into his character. You know what I mean? Like, Zendaya, I'm into all that. But Christopher Walken, I'm like, eh. But this one, I wasn't like, oh, that's RDJ. Like, I bought into his character. And I'm just like, I was into it because he felt like he was into it. You know, like, he was really fully committed to this character and who this person was. So I was here for it.
Yeah. It took me a while to get there. I think it took me the episode to get there. And I think in the end I did. And I was like, cool, I'm really bought into what he's doing with this character. He obviously looks like pretty kind of like a degenerate. He looks he looks kind of like war torn a little bit and like he's a pretty shady guy. And so I ended up buying into his accent and his mannerisms and his energy and the things that he does bring. But I think when he first showed up in this very first scene, they meet outside of this theater, I was like, oh, it's Robert Downey Jr. Like, what are we doing hanging out with this guy again? He just won an Academy Award. Like, I was much more interested, or I was much more focused on like RDJ's in another project. I think that is just like his personality. And I wonder if having 8 episodes or 6 episodes or this kind of elongated time to build a character with him, I wonder if this show is going to help break that a little bit and kind of shed some of that, at least for like audience members like you and I, because I wonder if by the time we get to episode 6, we're just like locked in on this guy where we're just like, oh, this is like, we're super sold, and RDJ committed all of this time and energy into this. And we're not just getting, you know, a 2-hour and 15-minute MCU fan fest.
I'm curious. I'm remain optimistic. I'm excited to see what he brings to this show. I think, you know, they, Park obviously must have seen something in him to cast him in this role. And I mean, we know he can act. He got stuck in the Marvel machine for so long, but like, the dude can act. He's a good actor. So I'm excited.
Yeah, the dude can act for sure. Anything you want to say about this first scene here, meeting Claude outside of the theater, kind of getting an introduction into their relationship? This for me is where I was trying to pinpoint and like put my finger on like, what are we doing? Who's who? What are our relationships here? It was kind of thrown into the deep end.
I just enjoyed that the movie that was coming in is also the title of the episode, Death Wish, because it does also kind of reflect like what our main character is going through, like being kind of a spy and stuff like that. And so I thought that was kind of interesting to bring that Charles Bronson film into the fold with this. But I thought it was a great way to meet these people.
Nice. I do dig that. Okay. Second one on the list here, interrogating the woman in the theater. We get this really cool editing style from Park where he does like this rewinding editing type thing where we like literally rewind the tape to go back in time to another kind of time that we're with our protagonist here. And for me, it's really fun because he does this rewinding and I'm like, oh, what did I see that like we might not ever investigate? Like we might not ever see any of those things that were flashed so briefly before our eyes, but it gives such a great, interesting context to being much more fascinated of like, oh wow, like we're going back in time and I wonder what transpired in all of this time. I thought that editing to get to these scenes was really neat.
Yeah, it was super cool. I mean, we saw it from the beginning of like just being outside the theater where what looks like the beginning of the scene is actually the middle of the scene.
Yeah.
And we play through some of it and then like we rewind even further back than what we started at to see the full thing then play all the way through. So yeah, the editing style is really interesting. I thought the camera shots were really interesting here too as well. Like a lot of tight, straight on shots, center of the frame with the woman and the captain like looking at each other. I thought this was super powerful. It worked great.
And in this scene is where we get Claude, we get the captain, and then we get the general as well. Mm. And they're all sitting together and they all represent very different things to each other. And they all have big ulterior motives. Yet they find a way to all sit next to each other and be all interested in the same exact situation that's transpiring, which is these guys interrogating this woman and basically asking her who or like what was your tip or who was your guy?
Who's your informant? Yeah.
Who's your informant? And how did you drop this roll of film in the mail? And come to find out that the captain, in fact, dropped this roll of film in the mail. And we'll get there when we get there. But like, really interesting that we sit with the captain so much in this. And like you mentioned, like we get these big face on shots and it's really uncomfortable and the captain's getting really uncomfortable. And for me, I was like, oh my God, like is this kind of going to fold in like episode one? Like are things going to get really south really, really quickly? Mm-hmm. Didn't happen, but things blow up at the end, literally, figuratively, literally, whatever you want to say.
No, I mean, the captain cries, like it brings our show title to like its literal meaning of like, this is a sympathetic man who's like put in this position of having to be a spy, but you know, he's watching this woman that's like being tortured up there. And I'm sure part of him is like, oh, I can end this, you know, but also if I admit this, then basically we're just both going to die. So it's either we both die or just she dies. Like there's just all this kind of turmoil kind of you can see on his face. It's so interesting and yeah, just really well done.
Then we get this scene where we're filled in a little bit more about the film and we see it's another flashback and we go back to 48 hours prior and essentially them finding the woman and she has this little roll of film in her mouth, and the captain kind of storms to the roof of her house and tries to take the film out and like pries open her mouth, which like brutal mm-hmm. stuff from the get-go. And she ends up swallowing the film. And this is a really interesting juxtaposition because, like the title says, like you mentioned, the sympathizer, like,
yeah,
this guy's causing all of this. He's doing this, mm-hmm. but he has to do it. But he also has the power to like end it at any moment in time. And then she is taken to their headquarters and put on a can, and they're just waiting her to this yeah. little, I don't know what he says, the candy or the little candy in the chocolate or something like that.
Yeah.
And the one thing I wanted to note about this scene is Claude feels like he's directing at us. And then the camera reveals that he is indeed talking to the captain. Mm-hmm. And basically like telling him like, you got to nut up, dude. Like you got to get in here. You got to get involved. Like this is your thing. And really putting on this big broad show. But RDJ is doing something really weird here. And he's like doing weird shit with his eyes, and like his face is like kind of getting contorted, and he's looking through the camera, and it's a little disarming at first. Cause I'm just like, wow, we're really close. Like we gotta back up a little bit. Give me some space. I think that's the point.
yeah. I think it's like putting us into the headset of the captain, you know, just like how intense this stuff is. And yeah, I mean, having this woman sit in the middle of a room surrounded by four or five men, just like waiting for her to take a shit to get this like roll of film out, just shows the extent they're willing to go to. But yeah, I thought this was a well done scene. And yeah, again, like he really just brings this whole sympathizer thing to the forefront, which I think is just really well done.
Then we cut to 3 days earlier, and we understand that this roll of film that they're awaiting to come out of her does indeed include pictures of a complete staff list for the general. Mm-hmm. And this staff list is the people that the general is planning to essentially have escape with him to yeah. America. And he is very, very clear that he's not fleeing. He is just like leaving for a certain amount of time.
He's like retreating temporarily. Like I'm not fleeing, I'm retreating temporarily. Yeah.
Right, which I find really neat, because there is a very quick scene in the beginning with the general and the captain where they're talking about their English and the yeah. captain's the general's English skills. And I think it's really interesting the English words that he chooses mm-hmm. in this episode and how he uses them. So the captain is searching for this complete staff list, and he ends up finding it. He takes pictures with this little spy camera, which is pretty cool.
Such like, a cool camera.
Such a sick camera. You're like, ooh, cool. We're doing spy shit. Feels good. I think this scene for me is probably the one moment in the whole episode where I'm just like, ooh, like we're like tiptoeing around each other. We're trying to find stuff. Like mm-hmm. things could go bad at any second if somebody catches somebody, and it feels the most thrilling.
Yeah, this does feel very spy. You know what I mean? Esque. Like that's kind of what this is. And even to the point where, you know, he's like, oh, I forgot something inside. I got to go grab that. And then trying to buy off the secretary or the admin, you know, just like giving her treats. So like, don't think that's weird. Like, oh, I don't know. I thought this worked really well. The undercover stuff plays nicely. He does a good job of it. And yeah, like you said, it's the real kind of like espionage aspect of going undercover.
Yeah, it's exciting because you get both this espionage and then obviously you get these kind of dark shadowy politics that we're dealing mm-hmm. with through the whole series. And I think the more we get those, I think the more interested I will inevitably become, because I'm curious how they're all going to interlace. And like, I want to know what happens to these guys. Like, I want to know who is going to flip on who, or like how these relationships are going to shake out, because they're not going to be nice to each other forever is my guess.
Yeah. And I like too in this that like the general put the captain in charge of like who gets to come on these planes. I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but the fact that he was talking about like, I don't want the competent people, but I can't pick the incompetent people, because then that'll like draw attention. So
red
it's
flag.
Like, I'm going to do the people that are incompetent, but that look like they're competent. You know, it's like, oh, that's like actually really smart. Cause you don't want like anyone trying to overthrow the US government when you guys go over to America. It's like, you need the people who aren't actually going to get anything done.
But yep.
I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, super cool. We'll get to that in just a second. I have one thing before that, when Claude comes over to the general's house, and the general's essentially bartering for two planes out of Vietnam instead of one plane. Now, this is one day before the fall of Saigon, and they're scheduled to leave and flee to America the next day. And really interesting how it's clearly stated that the general chooses to speak Vietnamese and use a translator sometimes mm-hmm. when he is put under serious duress or like wants to be more authentic and doesn't want the other person to know, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so he uses the captain to kind of be his translator and barter for two planes. And he basically says like his family alone and his extended family is like 40 people. And so mm-hmm. he's got a lot of people to worry about here. This is the scene for me where I most like what RDJ is doing. And I think he has some great energy back and forth and like plays that mysterious kind of like this guy knows what he's up to energy really, really good. He flips the two for two planes. And then we get this narration from the captain saying like, we all knew that Claude wasn't going to guarantee us two planes. He knew that we knew that he wasn't going to guarantee two planes. So they're all just bullshitting each other and they all know it. And yet they're literally fleeing the country from the war. And I think there's like a million things swirling about that make this interaction, hopefully the first of like many interactions with this kind of tension, super intriguing.
Yeah. The narration is so interesting. Voiceover can be so tricky, but I think it can work well, especially like in flashback. And that's what this does. And that scene, like you said, it's just perfect. It's like, we knew that there wasn't going to be two planes. Claude knew that we knew that there wasn't going to be two planes.
And we knew that Claude knew that
Claude knew that we weren't going to have two planes, you know, but they still are just like, all right, yeah, well, I'll get you two planes. Sure. It's like, okay, perfect. Wonderful. Just knowing like none of that was going to happen. It's like, but you've got to just kind of like follow through with it when it comes to the politics, you know, you've got to hold it up. So yeah, this was a great scene.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, like that's the politics of it. Okay. Now we're at what you mentioned, burning classified documents. They're ready to flee, ready to go. The captain and the captain is supporting the general in this. He makes a note and says like, the general did not let people see his severed toes, which I think mm-hmm. is really interesting. Like the general is just fucking thrown in the towel here. He's like, we're getting out of Dodge. Like we're fleeing to America. Like fuck my country. We're getting out of here. And this is where they're essentially telling the captain is telling who is going to be on the plane and who is not going to be on the plane. Mm-hmm. Fucking sick transition with like the piece of paper and the ruler and slowly discovering the more and more of the list and filling up more of the screen and the frame. This is a great scene that I think leads into obviously a really intense final 10 minutes of the episode.
Yeah. How crazy was that one guy who's like, I'm going to bring my wife and my mom
dude,
instead of
wild.
My wife and my daughter. Cause I can just
and
make
he goes,
another
I can
daughter.
Always have another kid. Oh my God.
That was so crazy. And then like, even when we show the mom, she's like, why am I here? Like, why is your daughter not here?
Well, and the captain responds too. And he says, you know, there's a relationship to a mother is irreplaceable. Or he says something along those lines where it's like, nobody can be like your mother. And it's just like, he knows the game that he's playing and he knows he's playing it with incompetent people that that appear smart, but are at the end of the day making decisions like that. And I think that in the captain's eyes, he's like, man, I crushed this. Like I got it in the bag. I chose the right people to really basically fuck this up.
Well, and the other dude I like too is just like, I need at least 5 seats. And if I don't have that, I'll shoot myself now. And he's like, he just literally pulls out a gun and just like a rack of bullets. He's like, just like, keep it clean. I'll give you some privacy.
And he walks out. Yeah.
It's just like, oh dude, that's crazy. Such a good scene.
So good. Yeah. Such a great scene. And then we get a pretty explosive final 10 minutes, like I mentioned. So, Claude meets the general and the captain at the airport. The general gives Claude the keys to his motorcycle.
Yeah.
And I love Claude's reaction. He's like, oh, yeah, I'll take you up on that. And he just like gets on the motorcycle, which is sick because he's like, cool. Like this is great. It's a win-win free bike. And then the general and the captain go to get on the plane, and essentially they instead have to take a bus ride to an airplane that's further down the strip. And on that bus ride is when this airfield starts getting bombed, and the bus flips, and I believe the captain's brother and his wife and their kid, so the captain's like godson, are on this bus, and they get injured, and it's basically like this run and gun, like we got to dodge explosions to try to get to this airplane, and what do? And that's how we really leave the final episode, or the final moments of this episode, is our captain like sitting with his family and being like, again, sympathizing with like what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
And look at what we've become, like look at what this war has made us into.
Yeah, it is such an intense scene. The bombing is just kind of crazy. And even, you know, when they talk about the busload and the president or the general's kind of freaking out, you know, it's like, this is supposed to be all my people. It's like, listen, man, like either get on the bus or don't. Like, there's two people to a seat. Like, if you want to go, now's the time.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you're kind of out of power now, dude. Like, you just kind of got to do whatever these people are telling you to. So, yeah, really, really intense scene. Then, you know, the sister-in-law and the baby die, which is just like crazy as he's trying to like process that. But the plane's trying to leave. Like, man, there's so much going on here. I thought it was a great way to cap off this episode.
And everybody's yelling at him to come get on the plane.
Yeah.
And I believe he eventually make the decision? He gets on the plane before the episode ends?
I think so. Or is he stuck on the airfield? I mean, well, I don't know. Like, I don't know exactly on the episode that they show us that, but we do see like a coming this season kind of thing. And like,
I did not see this.
Oh, you didn't see that?
No. Okay.
All right.
Oh, save me, Ben. I don't want to know. I want to go in blind.
Okay. All right. That's totally fine. Well, I mean, you read about it at the beginning of this episode. Like the description even says like he flees to the United States. So like, chances are that he's on the plane, but, I don't remember seeing it, but either way, it's a great, great capper.
And then the episode does in fact actually end with him again in this re-education kind of cell. He hears the song Runaway by Del Shannon, which is kind of a song that he mentioned as a memory. And for him is this representation of hope, of how things can be honest between people and like how things can just be better. I'm really interested to see where we go with the whole season. I did not see this like, you know, coming on this season thing. So I don't know what we're really getting into in terms of like story or visuals. I do know that there's a companion podcast, like an official companion podcast for the Sympathizer. We are not that companion podcast, but if you want to join us for the end of the season, we can be for the whole thing.
Come back at the end of May. We'll talk about the whole thing.
Yeah, we'll talk about the whole season. But yeah, I had a good time. I think it's good. I am really interested to see where it goes. I think it is has a much more prestige TV feel to it than a lot of things that I've seen recently. It feels good in that manner. What's your true cinema for this episode?
I think it might have been just the conversation he was having with all the guys as he was telling them they weren't going to make the cut, you know, to get on the plane. Like all those different examples of stuff were just super funny to me. Like it brought a little levity to the episode. Like there was some humor in it, but like that was for me like one of the funnier scenes. So I'd go with that as my moment.
I'm going to go with Claude showing up at the general's house. I think it's not really a surprise. I think that is the highlight of the episode for me in terms of like what's capable between the three of these guys and kind of this crumbling of power and like kind of relinquishing of power and then other people getting it and how all of that works out together. And I think Claude coming in and being, you know, and being like, oh, there's no better peace symbol than like American liquor, and just giving him some liquor, which I think is really funny.
And the general too is like, this stuff tastes like shit, but I guess I better get used to it. It's like, if you're going to America, this is going to be your alcohol now.
That's what you're drinking. Tough life, man. Okay, we got two A1Xs. We're doing Park Chan-wook and we're doing RDJ. Two pretty big dudes. Pretty big deals.
Sure.
Okay, let's start with Park Chan-wook. We've got Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, Old Boy, Lady Vengeance, Thirst, Stoker, The Handmaiden, Little Drummer Girl, Decision to Leave, and The Sympathizer. How's your Park Chan-wook filmography shaping up these days?
Not as extensive as I wish it was. I've only seen a handful of these. But my favorite thing I've seen from him is The Handmaiden.
I knew you were going to say that.
I love that movie. It's so good. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. No, okay. I need to.
Have I talked about it before? I probably have, I guess. I love this movie. I think it's great. It is one of the most like sensual movies out there. Like it's amazing the stuff that he's able to like portray on screen. That's just like so sexual and erotic. But even without really being that, like he's able to like tap into that kind of a feeling. So this is a great, great movie. I highly recommend The Handmaiden to anybody that wants to see it.
Okay. I got to watch The Handmaiden. It's been on my watch list for a really long time and I just haven't got to it. I love Decision to Leave. I think Decision to Leave is a masterpiece. Now, I've only seen Decision to Leave once and I own the Criterion for Decision to Leave. And I just think it is such a brilliant movie, but it takes so much to get locked into it. Like it's intense. It's a very winding road that film is. But that was actually my introduction to Park Chan-wook. That's the first thing I ever saw by him. And I was just like, oh my God, like this guy's weaving a tapestry here. Like it's insane the level that we can get to. I did see Old Boy for the first time when it was doing its 4K kind of like restoration run. And I was like kind of melted in my chair for like 7 or 8 minutes after I watched Old Boy.
Dude, for real. You got the hammer behind you though.
What's that?
You got the hammer behind you though.
I do. I do have the Old Boy hammer, which is pretty exciting. I like Decision to Leave a lot. I'm probably gonna have to watch it again before The Sympathizer's over. Let's get a little Park movie action. Okay, we got RDJ. This will get interesting. This is a big one here. This is kind of a broad list. So let's see what we run into. We've got Weird Science, Less Than Zero, Soap Dish, Chaplin, Natural Born Killers, Only You, U.S. Marshals, Bowfinger, Wonder Boys, Ally McBeal, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Good Night and Good Luck, A Scanner Darkly, Zodiac, Iron Man in any of the MCU franchise films, Tropic Thunder, Sherlock Holmes, Due Date, Doolittle, Oppenheimer, and The Sympathizer. That's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of different stuff. A lot of good stuff, but maybe a lot of not good stuff too.
I mean, it's definitely a mix. It's crazy to think of him as like a teenager in these 80s movies, like Less Than Zero and Weird Science.
I mean, you didn't even put The Judge on here, man. Come on.
Well, I wanted to leave it off the list for you. I figured that's you're going to pull that, you know?
You know, yeah. Me and Mr. Robert Duvall, I'm always a fan.
Yeah, you're all about it. I know that. He's got like a wide breadth of stuff. Obviously, like, I love U.S. Marshals. I think he's great in that. I think he does such a good job. But I'm going to go with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
I think another movie I haven't seen. I'm 0-2.
There's plenty of stuff to watch out there. But that's like one of his resurgence films, you know, when he's making his comeback. I think he had like cleaned up at that point. And this was just, you know, shortly. When did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang come out? This came out in 2005. So he's only 3 years away from Iron Man. He's working with Shane Black, who he, you know, brought back for Iron Man 2. Mm-hmm. Nice Guys with Ryan Gosling. Ever heard of it? He wrote that.
Little flick. When are we getting Nice Guys 2?
I don't know. I'm ready to like another Russell Crowe movie. So give us Nice Guys 2 at some point.
Dude, I'm ready for you to like another Russell Crowe movie.
I know, it'd be nice.
You should see Land of Bad. Land of Bad, pretty good. Russell Crowe, pretty good in that movie.
I don't believe you one bit, but thank you. Appreciate that.
I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to look out for you here.
That's good. That's good. But yeah, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, him and Val Kilmer, Michelle Monaghan. Hilarious, hilarious film. Yeah, I love this movie.
Let's see. RDJ, nominated for 3 Oscars. Obviously won one for Oppenheimer most recently. Nominated for supporting role in Tropic Thunder. I haven't. It's been on my watch list for a long time. I'm a big fan in theory, really.
Yeah, if you've got 3 hours, maybe.
Maybe. It might be worth your time. I'm not sure.
It might be, yeah. I don't want to commit to that.
That's a big commitment. I especially don't want to commit to that 8 times. That's ridiculous. No, we gotta rein it in a little bit. Here we go. We've reached the point in the pod where I'm going off. Nominated for Best Actor in a Leading Role for Chaplin as well. This is tough because I obviously like Oppenheimer. I think he's very crucial, and I do think he deserves the Oscar for that role. Especially the way that he says brother in that movie, I think is iconic. I'm actually gonna go with Zodiac. I think he's phenomenal in Zodiac. And I think Zodiac is really interesting because it's something that he never really does another time, where he like plays someone like that. And I think it is the perfect like come down to earth RDJ role, where he is not really doing Iron Man. He's not really doing Sherlock Holmes or Doolittle. Like, he's not playing the guy that's like, the whole world adores me and I know it, so I need to be 110%. I think he's truly like showing up in a Fincher movie, and like he knows that. And I think what he brings is both like the humor, but the kind of that power behind the face, which is super interesting to me. Zodiac, pretty good flick. Pretty good one.
Pretty good flick.
Yeah.
Is that the last thing you did before getting to the MCU?
I think it is.
It's 2007.
I think it is. And that's what's so interesting about it to me is like, that's the last, really up until what I would argue Oppenheimer, really up until then, that's the last time we see actor RDJ, capital A actor RDJ. Mm. And then he goes on this run, right, for 16, 17 years.
Yeah,
where he's a franchise man. He puts a couple comedies in there, another franchise man, and like tries to be the face of all of those things. And maybe that's why Zodiac is so interesting to me, is because like it's just him before he blew up, really. I know he was nominated for Chaplin, and I know he was in other important things, nominated for an Emmy and things like that, but like it's just something special about that role.
Yeah, for sure.
That I really like. Okay. A24 ranking for episode 1 of The Sympathizer. What are you going to go with here?
I think like for a pilot of a show, this is pretty solid. I think I'd go with a A-minus 24.
Wow. A tier.
Yeah.
Whew. That's pretty good.
Really good. Yeah.
That's pretty good. We got to phone in Mr. Park on that one. Let him know.
He reached
the A tier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Text him up. You think Park Chan-wook's got a phone for sure? He's not Christopher Nolan, this thing.
No, I don't think so. No, he's got it.
He's plugged in. I'm going to go. So you went with an A-. I think I'm going to go with a solid B-24. Had a good time. I don't know if it's because I'm so tired / been watching so many things / there's so many other things to watch. But like, I just, when this ended, I just did not find myself being like, well, sick, like when does episode 2 come out? Like, yeah. I'm just not on that train quite yet. I'm having a good time. I'm here for the rest of the season. We will be covering the rest of the season, like you said, in later May, I think, is when all the episodes kind of come to a close. So we're going to do a full season recap. That'll be the next time we revisit The Sympathizer. So we're not going to go episode by episode or anything like that. That'll be a pretty packed episode. I'm really curious to see what we think then versus what we think just with one episode under our belts.
For sure. Yeah. I'm optimistic for sure.
Yeah, I'm optimistic as well. I think it'll be a really interesting show. Next week on the pod, it's Steve Martin, for real. We lied to you guys. This week is the sympathizer. It was supposed to be Steve Martin. I lied to you guys. I did not have enough time to watch the documentary. I also did not have enough time to watch any Steve Martin films. Here's the thing, and I think I mentioned this last week. I've only ever seen Cheaper by the Dozen. That's literally the only Steve Martin movie I've ever seen. And I'm like, I can't podcast like that.
Can't
so
that.
I got to go in. I got to watch some Steve Martin movies. If there's any like core Steve Martin movies that I should watch before we do the doc, before we talk about it, my DMs are open. Just hit me up, Ben. I know you've gifted me a list so graciously. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to check them out.
I think I'm going to rewatch some of those that I sent you too, because there's some that I haven't revisited in a long time, especially like some of his earlier stuff. So I'm excited. I do know that Matt Wyler would tell you to watch Mixed Nuts, which I definitely recommend. That's a really fun movie, but yeah, there's a lot of other stuff to get to.
I've heard of Mixed Nuts from a guy named Matt Wyler before.
Maybe once or twice.
Yeah, little one man hive for Mixed Nuts over there.
Yeah, yeah. You and Christmas with the Cranks. You two are just like, you have your solo Christmas movies.
Yeah, man. Hey, man. Never too early to fire Christmas with the Cranks. That's what I say. I can't believe we went from the sympathizer to Christmas with the Cranks. What a successful episode! Look at us.
Yeah, fantastic. This is fantastic.
Yeah, Steve Martin streaming on Apple TV Plus. So it's available right now. I believe it's like a 2-part documentary, like 4 hours in total. So
yeah, something like that. Yeah.
We're gonna put in the work. I'm gonna put in the work, especially. But
yes,
we're both putting in the work. I'm excited. It's gonna be good. And then May, we'll see what we're gonna cover. I think we got some good stuff on the calendar. I'm excited.
I'm looking forward to it. We got a lot of fun stuff that's coming up. Some documentaries, some stand-up, a TV show.
Ooh,
there's a lot of fun stuff
things
in May.
Have we done a stand-up before here on this pod?
I don't know that we have. We did that.
How are we going to do that? What are the
weird
logistics
variety
of covering
special? Like, would it kill you to laugh or something like that?
Oh, yes. That was interesting.
But I don't think we've done like a straight-up stand-up special, so this is going to be fun.
How are we going to? Wow.
What was your favorite joke?
Yeah. Give me your favorite one-liner. Give me your best impression of your favorite joke.
Yeah. It's going to be good. I'm excited about it. May's going to be fun. But yeah, let us know what you guys thought about this first episode of The Sympathizer. Where would you guys rate it? What would be your A1 or your A24 ranking for that? I'm looking forward to the whole episode or the whole season. I'm curious how you guys feel about it. You can hit us up. We're on Twitter and Instagram at 24 minutes of A24. You can also subscribe to us on YouTube and watch our beautiful faces as we talk about these things.
Oh, yeah.
We would definitely appreciate that. But either way, we love all the support that we get. Thank you so much. I am Ben Lawhorn.
And I am Ethan Simi. Spring break forever, bitches.